Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. 3 years ago, the New York Times reported that the Vatican had started a sweeping investigation of American nuns. Some praised the turn of events, saying they were grateful that the Vatican was finally paying attention to their dwindling numbers and communities. But others feared that the mission was more of a doctrinal inquisition and an effort to shift them back to convents, religious garb, and work in primarily Catholic institutions like schools and hospitals. That inquiry concluded last December, and its results have not been made public. But in April, the Vatican announced another investigation that had found that the largest and most influential group of Catholic nuns in the United States, the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, had some serious problems. And earlier this month, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops announced an official inquiry of the Girl Scouts of the USA, which celebrates its 100th anniversary this year. Some have suggested that both actions reflect a larger and growing intolerance for strong women in the church. Joining us now is Sheila Garcia. She is Associate Director of the U.S. Catholic Bishops Secretariat of Family, Laity, Women, and Youth. Welcome to the show, Sheila.
Thank you, Ann.
I want to let people know that you're not going to speak to the Girl Scouts investigation, but we can move on to a few other things. First of all, are the 2009 is the 2009 investigation at all related to the LCWR investigation and announcement?
Well, my understanding is they're two separate investigations. As you mentioned, the report on the first is still pending, and as far as the second, that's looking specifically at the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, which represents quite a few of the women religious orders in this country, and that's the initial stages. So two separate things going on here.
We heard from Sister Simone Campbell of Network. It's a Catholic social justice lobby founded by nuns at the start of the hour. She said that she was stunned by the reprimand of the LCWR, and I wondered, was the announcement of that and the appointment of an American bishop to rein in the group or oversee the group intended to be a surprise?
I can't speak to that. I don't know what the thinking of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith was. Certainly it did take a number of people by surprise. But we're just going to deal with it and move on.
The Vatican's assessment said that members of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious challenged church teaching on homosexuality, the ordination of women, and that it promoted radical feminist themes incompatible with the Catholic faith. First, how did they challenge church teaching on homosexuality? What are we talking about there?
Honestly, Anne, I'm not really sure. I don't know exactly what these charges are. Let me say about that investigation in general, just to inform your listeners. The Leadership Conference of Women Religious has been very cautious in issuing any public statements about this. They have decided that until their executive committee meets, that they do not want to issue statements or take any action. And I think that's, a prudent course of action at this point. And the Catholic bishops respect that. And for our part, we want to let the process play out with some integrity. So I would say at this point we're in a holding pattern on both sides, to be quite honest, that there's really not a whole lot going on, that we'll wait for LCWR to look at what the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith says, and then we'll have, a response and that kind of back and forth. I think I'm optimistic that there will be a resolution. Obviously, the bishops take the Vatican charges seriously, want to make sure that they're looked at. But on the other hand, the bishops are, they're so cognizant of the wonderful contributions that women religious have made to the church and to society, that they obviously want this to be brought to a happy conclusion where, we look at these allegations, make a decision on them, but that we also affirm the wonderful work that these women religious have done.
When we talk about the assigning a bishop to oversee the group, they're talking about giving them 5 years to revise the group statutes, approving every speaker at their public programs, among a lot of other things. How complicated is this to take on?
Right. Could be quite complicated. I assume that there's always room for negotiation here. So I assume there'll be a lot of back and forth on this kind of thing. And it's going to take a while. It's not going to be resolved right off the bat. Personally, I hope these issues will be resolved, with all apologies to you, kind of outside the media eye. I don't know that these things are best done in public.
Well, it's very rare that the church ever provides anybody, or I can say it's never been done before in my experience, to comment on these kinds of issues. So I was surprised, and I'm wondering why you are talking to us at all right now.
Right. Well, I think that we're not a secret organization, but more important, people are really talking about these issues. They're concerned about them, and I understand that you know, people just wonder, well, what is the church saying about women? And I think we have an obligation to put forward as a church the position of the church on women, the wonderful work that women, not just sisters, but lay women are doing in the church. That's a story that needs to be told.
A group called the Freedom From Religion Foundation has run a full-page ad in newspapers telling Catholics who disagree with the church to quit the church. And I was wondering if that's a tack the church supports, if there's any concern about that.
Well, it was an interesting ad. I saw it here in the Washington Post, mm-hmm. and it was a full-page ad. And this group, which apparently is comprised of atheists, agnostics, was asking Catholics to leave the church and join this group, which seemed to me quite odd. That people who have some religious faith would all of a sudden just join a group that apparently has no religious faith. So that was quite strange. But I don't know exactly why they did it, if they thought this was an opportune moment. To be honest, in talking with people, I think they certainly didn't take it seriously.
We're always hearing about the polls that show that most Catholics disagree, most American Catholics at least disagree with the church on issues of birth control, abortion rights, homosexuality, gay marriage, that sort of thing. How does the church reconcile its call to its the members, and knowing that at least if the polls are even half correct, looking out on their congregations every day, every Sunday, half of them at least, if not most of them, don't agree with a lot of what the church says.
Sure, it's tough. Church leaders recognize this. I think a lot of the problem is that people, Catholics, have not been well educated in the faith. And a lot of times what people know is the so-called bottom line. The church is pro-life. They're not for abortion. Mm-hmm. We are for marriage between a man and a woman. But people don't know the reasoning behind that. How did we get to that position? And I think that that's what the bishops are more aware of these days, to their credit, and are really making an effort to try to explain to people, obviously indirectly, they have to go through their pastors and the priests and all that, but trying to explain to people why the church teaches what it does. And I think when we do that, it's amazing what kind of response that you get from people, that they really begin to think about church teaching and see the wisdom of it.
Marie from Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Marie. You're speaking with Sheila Garcia.
Thank you very much for having me in. I'm in a rather unique position because I am a former member of a congregation that is represented by LCWR. And in fact, our president was at one time executive director of LCWR. So, and I was part of the congregation for over 20 years. So I do have some experience there. In addition to that, I was also hired by the diocese for a local worshiping community for over 8 years. When I first came to the Columbus Diocese, I was welcomed by the bishop. This is two bishops ago. Part of my responsibility, because I was born Irish with the gift of story, and I studied scripture, and part of that was in Israel. Part of my responsibility was having a Bible study, but also preaching at liturgy. The community that I was ministering within had a tradition of over 40 years of women preaching. Mm-hmm. That has gone away. With the changes that have been brought about by the Roman Curia with the liturgy in the United States. And I actually have a very close priest friend who was on the group. We don't need names here, but mm-hmm. He worked on this with the American Bishop Troutman okay. from Erie for many years. And the response that they consistently got from Rome was that their translations would not be approved because of inclusive language. So the evidence kind of builds up, and I, you know, Sheila, I appreciate what you're saying about some people not being well educated. We can all learn more. I'm the first to admit that. I learn every day. But I think it's really condescending to speak of people being uneducated rather than allow that there really is a different experience of church. The bishops have one role. They are not the church. Vatican II talked about the people of God being church. And there's a very different experience of faith.
Sheila Garcia?
Yes.
Do you want to respond to that?
First of all, Marie, you make an excellent point. Obviously, bishops are not the church. Certainly, Vatican II brought out that all of us are the church. So we do have different experiences. You know, where you stand depends on where you sit, and that certainly is has been your experience. The translation issues are very difficult. I can understand. As a woman, I can certainly understand. You know, you get used to hearing inclusive language in our society, and some of the, you know, the church language is not inclusive. It's hard, and that's simply a symptom, I think, of people's concern about what's happening with women in the church. So I respect your, you know, your experience. It's certainly very valid, and I don't have to validate you, but obviously, you know, we need to hear all sides, as Anne would say.
What about the overarching attention that the church is paying to women in the United States? Is the same sort of attention being paid to women of the church, nuns around the world, or is it just the United States?
I'm not aware of any similar allegations being made against nuns in other parts of the world, but I honestly can't speak of that authoritatively. You know, there's been some high-profile issues in the news recently that have brought this whole women's issue in the church to the forefront. LCWR, obviously, the Girl Scouts you mentioned previously. Again, we're working to resolve all of these. I don't think that they need to fester indefinitely. I think there can be a happy resolution to all of these issues.
But when they're talking about a time such as 5 years, how soon do you feel like they can get to a resolution, and how important is it to the church to resolve it quickly?
I think it's important to resolve it as quickly as they can. Now, obviously, as I said, these charges are serious, and you have to take some time to investigate them fully. But honestly, talking with bishops, they don't want this hanging over their head forever because they love the work that women religious have been doing in Catholic schools and hospitals. Many of them have women religious on their staff. They have personal experience with them. So my sense from them is that they would like to move on, get this resolved, get it behind them, and be able to move on to something, frankly, a little more productive.
All right. Well, I want to say thanks to Marie in Clintonville for your call. Appreciate it. Sheila Garcia, I want to thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome, Anne.
Sheila Garcia, she's Associate Director of the U.S. Catholic Bishops Secretariat of Family, Laity, Women, and Youth. We'll continue the conversation. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU News team.
Russell Andrews spent 20 years in the Army and Air Force. He died in 1991, but his ashes sat in a Columbus funeral home for years. That is until the Missing in America Project discovered them.
I, of course, believe that our veterans ought to be treated a little better than that.
Hear the latest in local and national news on Morning Edition on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station.
Be sure to watch an investigation into the collapsing Pacific salmon population. Salmon are now conceived in laboratories, raised in tanks, driven in trucks, and farmed in pens. Watch Salmon Running the Gauntlet tonight at 8 on WOSU-TV. 70 degrees with some sunshine in downtown Columbus, warming up to a high of 80 today. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 60. More sunshine for Thursday and a high of 84. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The Catholic Church has been in the news a lot lately. In April, the Vatican announced that the largest and most influential group of Catholic nuns in the United States, the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, had some serious doctrinal problems. And earlier this month, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops announced an official inquiry of the Girl Scouts of the USA, which celebrates its 100th anniversary this year. Joining us now is Kenneth Briggs. He's an author and blogger for the National Catholic Reporter. Ken was religion reporter for Newsday and religion editor for the New York Times. He is the author of Holy Siege, A Year in the Life of Catholic America, another book, Double Crossed, Uncovering the Betrayal of American Nuns. And he's also writing a book about the place of the Bible in contemporary America. Welcome to the show, Ken.
Thank you very much.
We often talk about, you know, the red and the blue states, the political polarization in U.S. politics right now. In reading about the Catholic Church, it often feels like there is a similar polarization, at least in the United States.
Yes, well, there certainly is between lay people and hierarchy, and on many issues, not so much the central issues of whether Jesus was the Son of God, but on all the practical sexual moral issues, almost all of them, there is some real division between where the laity is and where at least a big chunk of the hierarchy is. So yes, there is. It's red and blue in that sense. Though I don't know, is it comes out explicitly political very often, but the analogy is roughly correct, I think.
To what extent does the disconnect, maybe or maybe not at all, come from the fact that every time there's a new pope, they can change things up?
Well, no, I think it's more because the experience at the Vatican and the experience of what the church is within the hierarchical realm is so different from what being Catholic is in everyday experience for most, particularly American Catholics. I think some of it's a matter of pragmatism, and part of it's because I think a lot of Catholic lay people took very seriously when the Second Vatican Council said, we value the experience of laity, and then had to kind of listen to what laity had to say, and sometimes it disagreed very much with the perceptions anyway that the hierarchical group had of the way you're supposed to be Catholic. In other words, people who were in Catholic families, people who were leading lives as Catholics in the professional world, people who were experiencing both human rights causes in this country and women's causes, were going through a very different experience, and I think they came out in a very different position. So I think the popes are actually very much under pressure to maintain the same policies as their predecessors. So there usually isn't much opportunity there to see change. Although in the case of Pope John the 23rd, who came in at 1959, he was seen as the great innovator who allowed the transition from the church from the Middle Ages to the modern age. So a lot of people got their expectations up a little bit because of his action.
The modern Catholic Church was compared by one blogger I just read about this morning to the 16th century Catholic Church. And really, in just 60 years or so, there has been that much upheaval, that much change again?
Well, there has, because of the nature of Western, particularly democratic societies, in which for the 16th century, when you had the Reformation and then the Counter-Reformation, the hierarchy pretty much determined what the church was. In the 20th century, a lot of things determined what the church was and how the church felt, including the church's own teachings at Vatican II, which redefined the basic nature of the church from the church is the hierarchy to the church is the people of God. And once you begin to introduce that sort of democratic influence into the church, things are never the same anymore.
So it's like the 16th century in that, there are some in the hierarchy who would like to impose a kind of authority that would apply everywhere, but it's not possible under conditions now.
3 years ago, the New York Times reported that the Vatican had started a sweeping investigation of American nuns, and some were enthused about that. They said they were grateful that the Vatican was finally paying attention to their dwindling numbers and communities. Is that still the feeling out there? Now, that's a different investigation than what than the one that led to this recent action, but of affecting the LCWR. But what about that?
Well, I think the expression of enthusiasm was putting the best face on it at the time, because I don't believe many people within the Leadership Conference of Women Religious Groups, in other words, all the groups that send their leaders to that group, I don't believe they were pleased at all at what seemed like the culmination of a great deal of hostility over a long period of time. But I think for diplomatic reasons, many said that they were looking forward to it and kept their fingers crossed. But then there's that other group of leaders that belongs to the minority group, the 20% who belong to that other very conservative group that did welcome it, because they are certain that by following tradition, they are right, and the LCWR, who composed mostly of people who updated and modernized and reformed their communities, they're convinced that they're wrong. And so there was some rejoicing on the very conservative side. Otherwise, I think there was general despair, and I think it's still there.
My guest is Kenneth Briggs, author, blogger for the National Catholic Reporter. Questions or comments, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Mike in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Ann. I just wanted to point out that there are many of us Catholics who see the conflict as one between the power of the hierarchy, the bishops going all the way to the Curia in Rome, against the authority of the women religious. They have stood fast in promoting the changes of Vatican II and not necessarily emphasizing all of the traditions that the bishops seem to want to impose, especially in their failure to deal with the sexual abuse scandals in the last 10 or 15 years. So many of us Catholics gather on Tuesday evenings outside the cathedral from 6 to 6:30 to pray for the sisters and for the LCRW. And we certainly would welcome other Catholics to join us there, or any religious persons who would like to join us there for a peaceful and resolution of this situation.
All right. Thank you, Mike. So, Ken Briggs, bishops have power but no authority.
I think that's an excellent point, and that's a very interesting distinction. To me, power can be rather arbitrary, without any force of example behind it or with any compelling, persuasive qualities to it, whereas authority usually comes from that persuasive element. And I think American sisters have, by and large, persuaded the Catholic public and the public in general that they have the authority because they stand by what they believe and have gone ahead with the changes that they were asked to do. It's important to remember that the Second Vatican Council, which was the great turning point in four centuries, really, at that moment, the American sisters and sisters all over the world were requested to look at their communities and change where they felt necessary. Once they started to do that, however, the resistance started to build against the very changes that they had been authorized to do. So, but I think they have credibility. In other words, I guess I almost always say that authority goes with some credibility, real authority that way. And I think, well, bishops have been losing credibility. I think sisters have been gaining, if anything, gaining on what they already had.
In a practical sense, what's going to happen with the LCWR? Apparently, they've rejected the edict. Can they do that? I mean, what physically, literally, practically happens now? Does a bishop move in, or how does it work?
It's hard to know what the practical outcome will be. If they decided to kind of politely decline the offer to to let the commission come in and, in a sense, force a lot of changes on them, then if they allow that to happen, then they don't feel comfortable with their own integrity. But if they say no, I don't know really what the Vatican and the bishops can do. They can decertify them, but it seems to me that they're already in a very tough negative position with the laity, and that would just further, if anything, further lessen their credibility with American Catholics. So I think even though the sisters themselves are in a quandary, I think the bishops are in some ways in a bigger quandary.
Are American nuns more liberal than their counterparts in other parts of the world? I know in some countries, obviously, they would be more traditional, but is it really that much different? Otherwise, why all the attention paid to them?
Well, I think it's because if you're living in America in particular, and to some extent Europe, although Europe didn't have many sisters, even at the beginning of the Second Vatican Council. That really wasn't so much a factor there. But we live under the conditions of egalitarianism and democracy and all those things. Those cultural forces have made the mentality and the consciousness of American sisters different from what you might find in some other parts of the world, which haven't undergone that kind of, I hesitate to say modernization sometimes because it sounds like it's all glorious, but we know it isn't. But just American culture itself is at such a different point from what most cultures in Africa or Latin America or even Asia would be, that you're going to get a whole different a response. After all, American sisters, even in 1960, just before the Second Vatican Council, were very well educated. That's made a big difference. They were the best educated people in the church, still are, basically, and then began to get all kinds of graduate degrees and everything. So you had a different community of people than you have in countries where sisters didn't have that opportunity. So anyway, it's a cultural thing. It's a Western thing. And yes, because the American church has so much influence in the world, it's going to it's encountered the democratic experiment first. It's going to face those problems first, and the rest of the world is kind of watching, I think.
I mentioned earlier that in May, earlier this month, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops announced an official inquiry of the Girl Scouts of the USA. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's probably one of the worst public relations decisions I have ever heard of. And it tends to highlight the extremely narrow focus of the mission that at least some bishops seem to be on, to reannounce and reassert Catholic teaching on issues that Catholics themselves have already made their decisions about. You know, whether it's birth control, many other related sexual issues, marriage issues, mm-hmm. have been pretty settled by the American Catholic public. They are in disagreement with the leadership of the church, and to think that they're going to change by being browbeaten, and particularly browbeating Girl Scouts, seems just like an ill-conceived notion at best, and a kind of undercutting of any attempt to gain a hearing for anything they really have to say, and they do have things to say about many issues that are very valuable. But they undercut that by focusing on something that seems so, to most Catholics, I think, most petty.
What do we know about the demographic of Catholics now? You were saying the more conservative represents about 20% in the United States. But for the other 80%, what do we know about them? Is it because most of them alive now were raised or came of age during Vatican II?
Well, they certainly came of age during Vatican II, but they also came of age during the civil rights movement and the feminist movement. And I think all of those combined to fashion a different kind of Catholic who thought differently about many issues. After all, Catholics who were by the 1970s were becoming accustomed to working in law firms aside lawyers who were women. Both men and women served as increasingly as judges in every other place in society. And it more and more made the church an anomaly in this culture clash that has deep roots to it. I mean, the old tradition of complementary sex roles versus the more enlightenment ethic of egalitarianism and how we're all created equal, that clash has gone on everywhere within society. The church has kind of been very reluctant on the official level to accept that kind of lesson, if you will, from modernity, doesn't see it as necessary. And so I think, whereas I think most Catholics have come to see that the creation of men and women is more and more equal, and in terms of most sexual issues were influenced by their own experience and the experience of fellow Americans.
The Vatican's assessment that said that members of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious challenged church teaching on homosexuality, the ordination of women, and promoted radical feminist themes incompatible with the Catholic faith. Another bone of contention has been the issue of health care reform of 2010. The American bishops came out in opposition, but sisters, many of whom belonged to the Leadership Conference, signed a statement supporting it. Is it in church doctrine that sisters may not contradict the American bishops on matters of public policy?
That's a very interesting question. If you're looking just at church policy itself, sisters have never had any power in the church, just going to the power argument. They have never had church authority and jurisdiction over anything. They are always in subject to the ratification or the review of male authorities. So in this case, I would say probably by the letter of the law within church canon, they probably don't have a right. And the church has this right to enforce uniformity technically. On a practical level, it becomes much more difficult. But they probably, and you can't accuse them all of this. I mean, if you want to fish for dissent in the church, you don't have to go very far. And since nuns are not ordained people, they're lay people, then they kind of are in that same mode as every other lay person who dissents, and those who do, and there are plenty of sisters who don't really dissent, but those who do kind of are, as Catholic lay, they are exercising what they see anyway as their prerogative and the wishes of their conscience.
You predicted in your book, Double Cross, that the number of nuns in the U.S. will continue to shrink, and that was a few years back. What sort of impact do you predict that these latest announcements by the church would have, if anything? Anything immediate?
Well, I think it just discourages, it's increasingly, to use a mixed metaphor, increasingly discouraging, because I think, you know, any young woman who thinks about going into an open-minded community of sisters would have second thoughts. And I think it's got to be have a suppressing influence, although on the among the conservative 20% groups, they may pick up a few, because they see some on that side have seen this as a great victory, that the liberals were wrong and we were right, and an appeal on that basis to young women or women of any age to whom that might appeal. I don't think that's a great number, but I think if anybody gains, I guess it might be that group.
Ken Burks, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Kenneth Burks, he's author, blogger with the National Catholic Reporter, also author of Double Crossed, Uncovering the Catholic Church's Betrayal of American Nuns. Coming up, author of the book Catholic Girls, How Women Are Leading the Fight to Change the Church. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. On the next Fresh Air, pianist Jeremy Denk talks about his new album of Ligeti piano etudes and Beethoven sonatas. You've got to be pretty obsessive to tackle some of these, and apparently he is. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Join us for All Sides tomorrow from 11 until noon for gardening tips for the summer, with author and Ohio's garden sage Deborah Kanapke joining the show. That's tomorrow during All Sides. WOSU Public Media presents the Chefs in the City online auction. You can bid now on fabulous Chefs in the City culinary theme packages. New items are constantly being added and items close on a weekly basis. So bid early and often, and bid high to buy. All proceeds benefit children's educational programming on WOSU. Visit WOSU.org/chefs to view all items up for bid.
Support for 89.7 comes from Montgomery & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Information about how Montgomery & Associates can help you achieve your financial goals is at themontgomerysolution.com.
70 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today, a high right around 80. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 60. Mostly sunny for Thursday and a high of 84. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about the Catholic Church and its women, both in its orders and in the laity, given recent announcements by the Church regarding its largest order of nuns in the U.S. and also the Girl Scouts of the USA. Earlier, we spoke with a representative of the U.S. Catholic Bishops. She was lead staff to the Bishops Committee on Women in Society and in the Church. Joining us now is journalist and author Angela Bonavolia. She wrote Good Catholic Girls, How Women Are Leading the Fight to Change the Church. Her articles and essays have appeared in many newspapers and magazines. Her article, American Nuns, Guilty as Charged, about the Vatican action against the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, appears this week on The Nation Online. Welcome to the show, Angela Bonavolia.
It's great to be
Sorry
here.
About you. I know I miss. I got the title of your book wrong at the outset. It's Good Catholic Girls: How Women Are Leading the Fight to Change the Church. Angela, you've been working on strengthening the role of women in the Catholic Church for a long time, and you wrote in your book that women were leading the fight to change the church. Is that part of the problem, that men aren't part of the fight, too, and part of leading the fight?
That's an excellent question, and I think the answer is yes. I think it's changing somewhat. One of the major issues that I've been looking at over the years is the issue of women's ordination, and that women are not allowed to be ordained in the Catholic Church right now. And what's happened over the past few years is that some very prominent Catholic priests have stepped forward to support this movement. And bless their hearts, it's been really, really important. But they have the wrath of the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith has really come down on them as well. But I think that the more men who come out and defend and fight for this change in the church that's so desperately needed, the more important it will be. And I also should add that in Europe, there are several countries, I think Austria, perhaps Ireland, that where there are priest groups being very public about supporting women's ordination in the church. So I think that in answer to your question, there desperately needs to be men standing up to support these changes. But the women are out there. I mean, they really, and as you said, it's both nuns as well as lay women who have taken on really important leadership roles in the church. One of them that I always like to point out is that had there been no Barbara Blaine, there would be no survivors network of those abused by priests. And that is the major national, I would dare say worldwide, voice for survivors of clergy sexual abuse. And she was sexually abused herself by a priest, and she just took all that energy and heartache and put it into starting this organization that has been absolutely key to calling the bishops and the priests to account as much as we've been able to do for these terrible crimes that were committed.
Some people have compared the attention that's being paid to U.S. nuns and American Catholic women. If they had paid as half as much attention to the priests who were molesting children over the years and the reports of molestations over the years, there wouldn't have been the problem there was. And it's kind of, I guess, possibly a cheap shot. It's hard to know how much effort they did do behind the scenes, since the church does so much behind the scenes.
Well, that's true. But I have to tell you, Anne, I mean, I have interviewed women, nuns and lay women, chaplains. There are a lot of Catholic women chaplains who brought these kinds of situations to the attention of the priest in charge, the bishop in charge, and who were literally fired for their trouble. And in fact, recently, your listeners may know that up here in Philadelphia, there's a very major case, the first Monsignor to be brought to court for endangerment of children. And up there, it's really important that, you know, that this is going on up there. And one of the women who testified was a nun who actually went to a bishop in that diocese and said that she had noticed that a priest was using child pornography, and he was someone who had been on probation for that earlier, and she was fired. So I think the cover up has women have really suffered too in the process of this cover up. But I have to also add that, and this is kind of a sad piece, that it really hasn't been the American nuns who have taken the lead in calling the church to account for these crimes. Certainly individual nuns have done that, and they've done it bravely and brilliantly. But as an organization, they really haven't done that. And that's something that I know the survivors feel badly about.
Tom and Marion, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thank you. With all the discontent and disagreement that we hear being discussed this morning and that we know, I'd like to ask your guest her thoughts about the possibility of there becoming a split in the Catholic Church.
Oh, that is so on target, that question. I think on some level it's already happened from where I'm looking. But I want to answer that in two ways. The first one is, and this sort of relates a little bit to your previous guest, his comment that the nuns didn't really have a right to speak out the way they're speaking out. I really disagree with that. I mean, we have in the church this crucial concept of the sensus fidelium, which was crystallized in Vatican II. And it starts with the belief that the church is the people of God. It's all the people. It's not just the hierarchy. It's the sisters. It's the theologians. It's the Catholics in the pew. The concept says that their experience is an important source of theology, and that teachings have to be received and accepted to be valid. And in fact, in Vatican II, it even said that this sense of the faithful is infallible, that it must be included in the teachings of the church. So if that's the case, then it's crucial that Catholics have an opportunity to say what they feel about church teachings. And I think we're seeing that. So it's everywhere right now. And I think as the nuns have come out and defended, whether it was the Affordable Care Act or the compromise on birth control, or whether it's sisters coming out and defending the rights of gay Catholics to be in the church. I think there is a concept in the church that gives Catholics the right to have a voice in church teaching. So that's a real, if that could begin to be recognized, I think that could change the institutional church as it is. And perhaps, you know, one of the women I interviewed for my book, her name is Mary Rammerman. She was ordained up in Rochester, New York, years ago in a Catholic church. And I can tell you that story if you want me to go into it. But what she said was there should be three branches of Catholicism like there are three branches of Judaism. There should be Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox. And I think that's wonderful. So that could, you know, that could be one vision. But the other, in reference to your caller's question, is there are lots of grassroots communities now that are Catholic faith groups that meet in people's homes, and there is this movement of the ordination of Catholic women that's happening outside the church, and they are being ordained, and there are well over, or I don't know, probably close to 200 now, and they are leaders of community community worship groups. So there is kind of a split, but the part that is split off is not very big right now. The biggest group, as we all know, is the 30 million Americans who have left the Catholic Church, which one priest told me was the largest growing church in the country.
Thank you, Tom, for that call.
I agree with you completely. Thank you very much for the
Thank
answer.
You, Tom. Thanks for calling.
John in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, John.
Yeah, I just had a quick question. I'd like to know if your guest thinks that this kind of situation would, you know, cause any type of progress in the church or policy changes, and what those might look like. And I'll take my answer off here.
Thank you, John.
Which kind of situation do we think John means?
Probably the investigations.
Yes.
And maybe the Girl Scouts as well. So the investigation or the oversight that they're going to implement on the LCWR and the Girl Scouts, I guess.
I think it could cause an enormous change. I mean, as you may have talked about earlier, one of the world's leading feminist authors is Sister Joan Chittister.
Mm-hmm.
And she told the National Catholic Reporter that she felt, first of all, that this investigation was actually immoral in the way it treated the women and what it proposed, this takeover. And she felt the only alternative was for the Leadership Conference to become an independent organization, to literally leave the Vatican fold. It is now a canonically recognized group. If that were to happen, that would be very dramatic. I think that would be a step into the sensus fidelium. I think that would be a step of the sister saying, I have a right in Catholic doctrine and teaching to have a voice. Whether that would be a very dramatic step, though, whether that will happen, it really remains to be seen. In my research, the Leadership Conference has said that after their meeting at the end of this month, they will come out with some sort of a statement, but they don't expect to make a decision on how they will handle this takeover proposition until they have heard from all of their 1,500 members.
You know, you mentioned the idea of three branches of Catholicism, and I wonder, and compared it to Judaism, but there's a central figure in Catholicism, the Pope.
Right. But the thing, yes, that's true, and that is different. But I think that the thing with this, you know, the sensus fidelium is what they said in Vatican II was that it's part, the voice of the people is part of the infallibility of teaching, that those teachings have to include the voice of the faithful, and that really moderates the power of the Pope, but it's a much maligned concept and not being paid attention to except the liberal people in the Catholic Church. Certainly, the bishops right now are on the other end of the spectrum, just really claiming absolute power. And certainly in the doctrinal assessment, I mean, the language in which they accuse the nuns of not heeding their word is very, very strong. Things like failing to provide allegiance to the mind and heart of the magisterium, failing to contradicting and ignoring teaching. It's very autocratic.
Yeah, I was wondering about that distinction between supporting an issue, say, same-sex marriage and or being silent on it. And there's this implication that because they are silent on it, they're supporting it.
You mean the
LCWR?
LCWR. Yeah. Because they're silent, they're supporting it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you're right. The bishops, the silence is not enough. They want, they basically said in this document, they accused the women of focusing on an exercise of charity, and instead of being vocal about issues like, say, the rights of homosexuals in the church and abortion and birth control. I mean, they want the party line followed in a very vocal way. They want the leadership conference to take on that mantle. And the leadership conference has been much more focused on poverty and social issues and working with Network, the social justice lobby. They're not about the business of, kind of lambasting people in keeping with what the bishops would like them to do. And it's a real conflict. It's a very deep, fundamental conflict in the church right now.
You said in your book, Good Catholic Girls, that the ranks of nuns in the U.S. is declining rapidly, and you've said in your book that what becomes of women in the church will dictate what becomes of the church itself.
Oh, I totally believe that. I'm glad you pointed that out, Anne, because, I mean, most of the people in the pews are women. Women are the heads of the families and the indoctrinators of children into the church. Women are now, Catholic women are looking at their daughters and saying, do I want my daughter in this church? And they're leaving in hordes. I mean, Joan Chittister, the nun I mentioned before, says this church is just bleeding women. So if that happens, when that happens, the church will become smaller and smaller and smaller. And it will be, perhaps it will become the conservative organization institution that the Pope now wants, Pope Benedict, and there'll be a different Catholic Church or other kinds of churches around it. But if they can't keep women, they can't keep the church.
You make another point where we are running out of time, but I wanted to get to it. You also point out in your book that Catholic women reformers have been ignored not only by the church but by the secular feminist community as well. Is that still the case?
I hope I'm helping with that. I consider myself a kind of ambassador between the two. I think it's a hard thing. I think part of it is that a lot of feminists are liberal, and I do think within the liberal world there is a bias against religion. There's just not a lot of room for it. So I think there hasn't been enough appreciation. But I certainly consider myself a crossover, being a feminist for many years, working on reproductive rights, as a matter of fact, and being Catholic and an ardent advocate for change in the church. So that is a wonderful thing to bring up, and I would love to see Catholic feminist groups around the country recognize the importance of the Catholic contribution to women's rights.
And the invitation by that organization telling Catholics who disagree with the church to quit the church? Thoughts about that?
Talk about that?
Yeah.
Which invitation is that?
Well, it's the full-page ads in the newspapers telling Catholics who disagree with the church to quit it.
Right. That's it's kind of like America, love it or leave it. I mean, when you grow up Catholic, it's in your blood. I mean, you are Catholic. I'm Catholic like I'm Italian. You know, it's just who I am. And I think you're telling people give up the right they have to fight for the soul of an institution they care about that's part of them. And I don't think that's fair.
All right. Well, Angela, thanks so much for joining us today to talk about it.
Thanks so much, Anne.
Angela Bonavolia, author of Good Catholic Girls, How Women Are Leading the Fight to Change the Church. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.